My guest in the studio began playing the piano at the tender age of 4. He graduated with a Bachelor of Music from Sydney Uni's Music Department, studying classical trumpet and baroque trumpet, and went on to complete the jazz studies course at the Sydney Conservatorium. For the past few years, he's been based in London, working with his own quartet. Andy Fitters, you've been a professional musician for a number of years now, but what did your parents want you to become?
They were actually quite encouraging. Funnily enough, my grandmother taught me the piano. So I started at 4, and my father's a musician and a composer, so which he kind of works around. He works as a lawyer as well, so he kind of works that around that. But I think when he found out I decided to go ahead with the music thing, I was quite a keen guitarist, and they weren't sure whether I was going to be a trumpet player or a guitarist. And I think they were happy that I went sort of the trumpet way, because I was tending more towards a bit of
a rock slash metal vein
on the guitar. So I think they're quite happy, as far as I can tell.
Well, that's not the romantic answer I was looking for, but nevertheless, isn't it great to hear the fact that someone was supported in their pursuits of the arts at such a young age?
No, it's very cool.
Started playing the piano at 4, that's pretty young.
Absolutely, yeah. It kind of happened with everyone in the family. I have 3 sisters and we all started at the same time. It became a bit of an institution, I guess.
Now, what was it like growing up in Gunnedah, wasn't it?
It was Gunnedah.
Being the kid who played the cornet, I'm from a country town myself, from Queensland, but I can only imagine what it would have been like had I chosen an instrument like that in such a small town. Certainly not the hip thing to do.
I was a little bit of an outsider, I guess, considered a little odd generally. But, you know, we had quite a strong brass band sort of movement going there with a gentleman who'd come from Newcastle upon Tyne in England and was running the brass band. So that kind of kept my motivation up. And from there, we moved to Newcastle four years later.
That was lucky.
That was lucky. I don't know how it may have gone following that if we stayed in Gunnedah. So.
But, I mean, you wouldn't have even really been exposed to any live jazz music growing up in a place called Gunnedah anyway?
Not at all. A very limited exposure to music in general, really, like just through the family and friends. It's quite a musical town, like with the country of Stedfords, and so the people coming from all over to do that. But it was mainly in the sort of, classical vein and all that sort of way.
The band Survival of the Fittest, a long-standing project now, isn't it, Andy?
Yes, it has been going on for quite a while. Yeah, and we've it's chopped and changed a lot just because a lot of the members have moved around and all that sort of thing. For this gig, one of the original sort of founding members, as you were, is coming. He's been living in New Zealand for the past 2 years. So,
Ruben
Derrick, yes, and he's quite a unique voice on the saxophone. And if you come down to the gig, it'll be quite an experience. He's quite a beautiful player, has very interesting ideas as well.
Andy, you joined the Army Reserves. Was that when you went to, when your family moved to Newcastle, or was it a little bit later on?
No, that happened when I first moved down to Sydney.
Right.
Just looking for some avenues to play as a young classical trumpet player, kind of still in a country frame of mind, I guess.
Now, did the regimentation of the Army Reserve have any effect on your approach to practicing or your music as a whole?
Well, it wasn't dissimilar to the way that I grew up, I guess. The band that I joined was a brass band. So, you know, since I was 11, I'd been playing a brass band, so there wasn't really that much difference. Although the whole military side of it was a bit of a shock to the system, it wasn't as bad as I first expected.
And I've always been fascinated by the army bands because they get out there in their uniforms and especially over the last 10 to 15 years playing a lot of hip music, and yet they're standing there very, very serious and regimented on the stage and really don't look as though they're that hip. Now, what's the relationship like with regular army reservists and the actual people in the band? Is there ever any aggro, or is there ever any?
Well, it sort of comes and goes. Like, you know, some people may have had a bad experience previously or something like that, you know, but generally it's pretty, you know, amicable, and they appreciate what we do. So it's, you know, we haven't had any bad, well, I haven't had any bad experiences yet. So yeah, I can't really say much more on that one.
Now, you're really a multi-instrumentalist playing brass, but you also pick up the flugelhorn and the cornet on this particular album, but you also play the guitar and still playing a bit of piano?
Yeah, I sort of dabble a bit on the piano. I use it more as a compositional tool these days. You know, I'm not really up there for going out and sitting in a jam or anything like that.
What's your favourite instrument?
Well, I just bought myself a custom-made trumpet over in England, so that's kind of the thing at the moment. I'm loving playing it. It's right. A beautiful horn. So I've gone back to my roots, so I'm into the trumpet.
You know? Oh, very good. Yeah. And do you ever use the mute or any sort of mute?
Absolutely. Yeah, there's a couple of tracks on the album where I'm using Harman and cup. So just getting that difference in timbre is a really good thing.
Oh, that's really nice. I'm a big fan of the mute. Who do you consider to be your greatest influences in jazz music?
It changes a lot, but I always seem to come back to, I guess it's mainly because I'm a trumpet player, I seem to come back to Kenny Wheeler and Dave Douglas. And it kind of stems from the way that I like to think of myself as well, I guess, because they're very, very talented players, but also their composition is amazing. So that's what I'm trying to go for when I, you know, approach a musical project.
Kenny Wheeler's got such a warm tone, hasn't he?
Yes.
I don't know whether you saw him. He was at the Basement some years back now.
Oh, yeah, that was probably with Mark Isaacs.
Yes, that's right. It would have to be at least 10 years, I suppose.
Yeah, no, I was working that night.
Yeah.
So I missed the gig. Damn. It's a bit of a shame, but I heard a lot about it and I heard it was a great gig.
Mm.
And I've heard the record over and over.
Tell us a little bit about Hewn.
Well, it's, I guess you could call it the most aggressive and in-your-face track on the album. And it came from that word, the mood that the word invokes. So
Survival of the Fittest and Hewn. What's your ultimate goal as a musician, Andy? Is it public recognition or achieving your own sound on your given instrument or financial success?
Peer
recognition? What is it?
I don't know. I think I'm more into creating something that has some sort of artistic merit. That's what I'm striving for, you know, and through that I'm aiming to achieve my own voice through playing and composition. Also, you know, I'd like to sort of work with as diverse a range of musicians as I possibly can, and also write for, you know, with that similar diversity. See what comes from that, really, you know.
Have you spent periods of time other than, I mentioned earlier, London? You were over there. How long were you over there for?
Just under 2 years.
2 years.
Yeah.
So you would have certainly been exposed to lots of different types of music in London.
Absolutely. It's incredible, the range of music you can see there, just moving just from suburb to suburb.
How did the quartet go in London?
It went pretty well. It didn't work as often as I would have liked, but I was playing with some great musicians, a bunch of guys who were in a band called Acoustic Ladyland and another band called Polar Bear. The drummer I had, Seb Rochford, was actually a pretty amazing drummer. Kept that all moving along, and it was received quite well. And we did a great gig in Rome as part of the Australian headline for the Villa Celimontana Jazz Festival, which runs from June to August.
Oh, very nice.
So, and that was a kind of the big gig there.
Mm.
Yeah, and it went down really well.
How important is the audience in the way you approach communicating musically?
It's vital. I think it's as vital as the communication that you have on stage. The feedback that you get from the audience and the sort of the input that you can give them from the stage is like, you know, an integral part of any performance, I think. And that's what I try to reflect with the Survival Band. You know, I try and get some audience involvement, you know. I don't mind hecklers. That makes the gig all the more fun.
So how long does it take you to pick up on the vibe of an audience?
I don't know, probably within one or two tunes. You get a vibe on whether you're getting a sort of a listener's audience or an audience who are there just to sort of hang out and have a good time. But I'm kind of expecting more of a listener's audience at the Sound Lounge there, because that's the reputation.
Some people might find the music on the album challenging. What do you say to them?
I guess take up the challenge. You know, there's that that kind of vibe. But the band actually plays quite a diverse range of things. My influences are, you know, quite broad. So, you know, it's anything from, like, you know, James Brown to, you know, Dolphy and Ornette Coleman and then, you know, back to some sort of rock things. I've actually got a band that's influenced by AC/DC as a side project to this as well. So
I was going to ask you a little bit about that later on.
Yeah.
Without giving any names, and this one, I must admit, I've taken this particular question out of a recent edition of the Downbeat magazine, and it's a question where they've asked a series of musicians whether they've had any bizarre or difficult circumstances in getting paid for their gigs. I was wondering whether you had any.
Yes. It just seems to be the way, I think. It's just the nature of the work. But yeah, I was doing some duo gigs over in London in a pub, and it was quite interesting how that all worked out. Yeah, so I was doing some part-time work with a wine company as well at the same time, and there was a relationship between the pub owner and my boss there, and it all sort of went...
So you ended up getting paid in wine?
I didn't mind getting paid in wine, you know, so it was quite nice wine.
See, this is what musicians are up against. It's not all beer and Skittles for the touring artist, is it?
Not at all, no.
Now, who are the band members going to be playing with you on Friday night?
Ah, this is really exciting because I'm actually going to have basically the whole band together as it was on the record. Unfortunately, Lawrence Pike can't make it on drums. So the rundown of the band will be me, Andy Fitters on trumpet, flugelhorn, cornet, and interesting European shoes. James Kennedy is going to be playing trombone. Reuben Derrick is going to have reeds. So I'm kind of hoping he'll bring a whole bunch of stuff along and add some depth to the three horn line, which will be really exciting. Ben will be playing bass, and that's Ben Waples.
Yep.
For those people. And David Goodman is going to be playing drums on the gig, so that's going to add a very, very different voice actually to Lawrence. So
yes, and another busy drummer around town is Dave Goodman.
Yeah, he's a great player, so looking forward to playing with him.
I was reading his selector on the Jazz Groove website only this afternoon, and he's got some very interesting and diverse tastes in music. Something Wicked This Way's been Andy Fitters, his band Survival of the Fitters, and he's my guest in the studio tonight, on which we're featuring tonight. It was one of the earlier releases on Jazz Groove from memory. It was recorded a couple of years ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, I recorded it at the end of 2002, when it was released early 2000, well, sort of late 2002, early 2003, really.
So it's your music probably has, I would imagine, has moved on somewhat from there. Will you be featuring some of this music on Friday night?
Yeah, absolutely. It's I still love these charts, so it'll be good to get out and play them. Just because of the nature of the writing, we haven't really played those tunes a lot, and the band's been, as I said before, it's been playing as a trio, so it's going to be great to get these charts out again, the survival standards, as you could call them.
And the other thing is the flugelhorn. We don't often, we certainly don't hear it enough, especially in Sydney.
I totally agree, yes. I think more flugelhorn would be a great thing. Now, you know, you see like Mike Bukowski playing flugelhorn every now and then, but generally not a lot of other people do that. You know, the band with Mike Kenny Solar, that's a lot of flugelhorn playing in there, but I haven't really seen them play for ages, so I'd love the flugelhorn, love the sound of it, love hearing other people play it. So
I was checking out your website, Andy. What's the address?
www.andyfitters.com.
This afternoon, and you've got a page up there, What's Andy Listening To? I was wondering, why did you put that particular page up there? Obviously, it's important to you for people to know your other influences in music.
I think that's important. Yeah, it's it sort of gives you know, if people are interested, it gives them an idea sort of where you're coming from. You know, if you get up there and look at it, it's quite a wide range of things. You know, like from Verez to, you know, AC/DC, and you know, then there's Kenny Wheeler and a whole bunch of English records and some Jazz Groove releases in there as well. There's a bit of a wide range of stuff.
You've got some other projects planned and in the pipeline. Can you briefly describe the direction for those?
We did our first gig with a group called Livewire in April this year, sort of debuted at Jazz Groove, and it went down really well. It's a quartet featuring Evan Manel, myself, Jackson Harrison, and Mike Mikowski, just some really young, up-and-coming, happening jazz musicians around town. And it's influenced by the music of AC/DC, I guess you could call it. So, you know, it's not particularly... You know, we're not playing their tunes or anything like that, but it's music with a jazz spin reflecting the vibe, I guess.
Okay.
And it went really, really well. So we're looking to do quite a few more gigs with it. You know.
What about recording?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to try and get them in the studio before the end of the year and, you know, put out a record. So, you know, keep your eye out sort of midway through next year for a record.
And there was another project as well.
Yeah, I've got a little big band, and we did a few gigs with that band before I went overseas. It's a 9-piece/10-piece, depending on how I'm writing. We did a few gigs. We had the late Gordon Brisker playing the original incarnation of the band, and he loved it, and we loved having him play there.
What's that band called again?
Fit Aesthetic, it's called.
Fit Aesthetic, that's so right.
I like naming bands with a play on my name. I find that quite amusing.
And able to relate to who you are. Because it's not easy, is it? It's not easy getting your name out there when you've really got two dedicated associations in Sydney, which I guess specialise in this type of music in Sema and Jazz Groove, you really just got to wait your turn to get a gig, haven't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, that's true. Like, they are doing great things, but, you know, the demand's too high for the supply, I guess you can say, because there's so many great musos in Sydney. And also, you know, musos travelling from, like, you know, Brisbane and Melbourne and, you know, anywhere else in Australia. There's just such this huge base of great musos and bands.
We just need a seven-night-a-week jazz-dedicated jazz club in Sydney.
Yeah, wouldn't that be great?
Well, look, Andy, thanks very much for coming into the studio tonight. It's been an absolute pleasure talking with you and getting an insight into the musician and artist Andy Fitters, leading Survival of the Fitters, Lament for a Llama.
Yes.
tell us about the llama, because it's a real llama, isn't it?
It's about a llama. It's not a spiritual man. It's a llama, like an alpaca. So I was never allowed to own one as a child. It kind of stems from that, I guess. So I wrote this tune, and this is probably my favourite track on the entire album. It's got a killer bass solo by Ben Wables on it.
No llamas in Gunnedah.
No. Maybe now, but not when I was growing up.
Andy Fitters, thanks very much and good night.
Thanks, Frank.